May be seated. There's a commercial advertising the Saab 500 Coupe. The script of the commercial goes like this, and I will try to read it in my best announcer's voice. The 17th century New England Puritans were people who devoted their entire lives to work and prayer. They would not have approved of the sensual beauty of the new Saab 500 Coupe. The Puritans believed that to have fun was a sin. There was no place in their lives for the pleasure and luxury of a new Saab convertible. For the Puritans, the only reason for living was to sacrifice and prepare for an eternity of holy peace. And aren't you glad you're not a Puritan? See your nearest Saab dealer. That is an honest-to-God quote. And if not a Saab, what the heck are we going to do with sex? Aren't you glad you're not a Puritan? Well, I don't know. Let's talk together in about 25 minutes. After reading with great depth for the last 2 weeks, I wonder whether this commercial is correct. They weren't the repressed, sex-denying souls that we have taken them for. Now, New Englanders, it is true, are not famed romantics. New England men can be a bit cold, dry, and laconic. New England women are not renowned for being hot-blooded. There is an old poem that goes like this. There was a young lady of Boston whose manner had such a deep frost on that she invariably froze every one of her beaux with her high plane of thought they got lost on. Garrison Keillor talks about the Puritans arriving here in hope of finding, quote, greater restrictions that were permissible under English law of their time. We're the only place in the country that's renowned for having something called a conscience, the New England conscience. One saying is that the New England conscience doesn't keep us from doing anything, it just keeps us from enjoying it. Now, young children would practice this as something that they would write on their slate plates or perhaps knit and sew. The phrase, in Adam's fall, we sinned all. Well, that is true. New Englanders were well acquainted with the concept of original sin as part of their common lot. But New Englanders also laughed at themselves and added the phrase, in Adam's sin, we all joined in. Blue laws and uneasiness towards sex and all of that, however, is not the total story here. Far from it, as we shall see. And we're going to examine some interesting questions, like why, when same-sex marriages came into American cultural life and law, why did it happen here and not in evangelical Mississippi or in free-floating hedonistic California? Why was it here? And the answer is going to surprise you. And even more importantly, why does religion at times bless and why sometimes repress our sexuality? And this is a much more interesting question than it appears to be. And thank you, Diana, for reading from the Song of Songs, which I believe begins to reveal the answer. From the Song of Songs 1:2, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Almost everything we think we know about the Puritans, and I would submit about the Bible, is really open to examination. In fact, more than 2,000 Hong Kong residents last year tried to call on a Chinese decency commission to restrict the Bible only to adults, because it contains passages that seem to give the okay to incest, rape, adultery, and a father offering his daughters to strangers for sexual gratification. Mark Twain said, "The Bible is the one book that you need to keep out of the hands of impressionable children." And indeed, for the two sayings against homosexuality that you can mine from the Hebrew scriptures, there are also invocations and invitations to polygamy. Lots of Bible heroes had multiple wives, Abraham, Jacob, and David. Let's see how they handle that in Alabama. And here's interesting background fact number one. Puritans were drawn and saw themselves as ancient Hebrews. They saw themselves as Israelites moving into a promised land. And yes, they quoted the New Testament, but they were fundamentally rooted, unlike many modern Christians, in a Moses tradition far more than the tradition of Jesus and Paul. And why is this important for their views on sexuality? Because the ancient Jews, and modern Jews as well, celebrate sexual instinct. Yes, these instincts need to be controlled. They need commandments. They need to be corralled. But they fundamentally believe that God creates sexual love in the garden and creates it before the fall. And unlike Christians such as Augustine and later medieval thinkers like Aquinas, they saw this erotic attraction and bonding as not only preceding original sin, but as the ultimate truth of our being. God made sexual beings. And in the context of all of creation, it was blessed. And the phrase applies, and God saw that it was good. The high priest at the temple in Jerusalem had a holy responsibility to enact the prayers and issues of purity in the life of the people and in temple worship, but was commanded to go home and to have sexual married relationship with a wife. Because the ancient Jews saw that sexuality and bonding, having relations, was a way of worshiping God and returning the gift, the blessing that we had been given. This is really different than the kind of religion I grew up with in Tennessee. And I have to tell you that the Puritans were quite revolutionary in their reassertion and that these Hebrew attitudes towards sexuality, that they were far better than the Christianity that preceded them. They believed that love must be sexual and could be sexual to give partners fully to one another in joy and exuberance. That was what Martin Luther was all about. He stopped being a monk. He married. And John Calvin and Zwingli and others really tried to reject the medieval sense that celibacy was better than marriage, or that purity somehow excluded our sexuality. They profoundly and specifically and emphatically rejected it. In fact, C.S. Lewis talks about how important it is that Puritan poets were the ones who took the romantic tradition and reoriented it into the relationships that bear the most impact on our lives. Jesus once said, there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by others, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. But because the Puritans were oriented much more to the Hebrew sensibility than to this sensibility, they affirmed the goodness of life in that way. In hymn 139, there is a very important phrase that we are, quote, wonderfully made and intricately wrought. Every aspect of our being, every aspect of our being is a miracle, is part of the fabric of creation, and that certainly includes our erotic natures. The Hebrews did not believe in a life after death. They believed in a life now. And that our bodies were God's most sublime, not shameful, but sublime creation. And the Puritans took that and they ran with it. It was extraordinarily important. In contrast to Erasmus, who taught that the ideal marriage was abstinence from sexual intercourse, John Cotton of this church said in a wedding sermon that those who call for marital abstinence follow the dictates, quote, of a blind mind and not those of the Holy Spirit. It is not good for us to be alone. It is not good for us to be so deeply connected. In fact, the Puritans had a word for it. You know what it is, don't you? Eh? Do benevolence. Over and over, Puritan writers talk about what we owe to each other in deepest relationship. It is sexuality phrased as do benevolence. I love that phrase. I'm going to be using it the rest of my life. An anonymous Puritan claimed that in this deepest relationship, quote, we may joyfully give due benevolence one to the other, as two musical instruments rightly fitted do make the most pleasant and sweet harmony in a well-tuned consort. All right, at this point in the sermon, everyone needs to calm down. Edward Morgan, the great historian, 60 years ago was doing research in the First Church archives, and he found a case at First Church in Boston, right where we are today, where a parishioner named James Maddock was excommunicated because, quote, he denied conjugal fellowship unto his wife for the space of 2 years together upon pretense of taking revenge upon himself for his abusing of her before marriage. It was possible for a wife to go to the minister and ask that their spouse be excommunicated for such a reason. That is how highly our Puritan forebears believed in intimacy. And let's admit, despite many ways in which the Puritan demeanor was admittedly a bit dour and constrained, that we have so profoundly misread them. And would the statue of John Winthrop be revolving about as quickly as something can revolve when a gay or lesbian wedding is performed here? Of course. And has religion, through much of human history, acted as a brake, a control over the surging power and biological drive of sexuality? Of course. But it's quite a different thing when religion acts as a guide, even a strict one. And when it is acted as a social control or even trying to deny and kill sexual expression, there's a vast difference and a key usually forgotten in the truth of the Puritans' life is that they were children of Elizabethans, hardy, lusty Elizabethans, and all that that suggests. But there was a way in which they were different from other people. And it has huge impact on American life, as I'm about to reveal to you. It was crucial that they did not see marriage as a holy sacrament. Now, that may be surprising to you. The Puritans only saw two sacraments, whereas the church before them acknowledged seven. But they only acknowledged the ones that they saw Jesus enacting. In other words, baptism and Holy Communion. That's it. Marriage was not a sacrament. It was actually a civil act. It was something that the state and not merely the church enacted and owned. And therefore, marriage relations became part of the life of the civil order, not just the religion. And because even though the Puritans wanted to create a pure and holy place, a shining city on a hill, they cleanly and clearly divided civil and ecclesiastical authority. They did so at the very beginning. It has had fantastic ramifications through our history. A minister could not be a magistrate. This division of church and state affected American history, and therefore we confront one of the great ironies in our history, and indeed the history of world religion. That exactly these constraints, that marriage was not a sacrament, and that a magistrate could not be a minister, and a minister could not be a magistrate, these constraints on ecclesiastical power given to us by the Puritans allows us, hundreds of years on, radical expansions of what sexual relations can look like and feel like and be like. Now, people in Mississippi under the sway of conservative fundamentalism do not sense these constraints. But here in Massachusetts, we do. And therefore, ministers and rabbis and imams do not make the laws. And they have only limited powers to make and shape modern marriage. For the Puritans, marriage was a civil, not a sacramental moment in our lives. And much, much more than this. What about this sense that religion should offer us a sense of blessing? Sex, like everything else in life, is limited and imperfect and bound through time into decay and open to misuse. Of course it is, because we're human. But there is also a deep blessing. You can find it in Taoism and Hinduism. I've talked about how you can find it in our own tradition, and I've talked about how you can find it in the Hebrew tradition. It is a sense that God gives us a deep longing of eros, a deep, pervasive, erotic longing. And if creation is holy, and if the body is holy, and it is, it becomes a vehicle for more creation. Sex is not a technique, and the person you're with is not an object. It is a relation. It is the deepest relation we can have. And Hildegard of Bingen talked about this deep sensuousness at the heart of creation. O fire of the Holy Spirit, life of the life of every creature, holy are you in giving life to forms. O boldest path, penetrate into all places. You bring and bind all together. Rivers spring forth from waters, and earth sweats her green vigor. This medieval female theologian tells us all we need to know about what religion can truly offer us, which is permission to express and to participate in the deepest longings of creation itself. And God looked at it, and it was good, and is good, and is a blessing.